Greetings, everyone. I hope you're well during this difficult time. And for those of you fighting the disease, I really hope you recover as soon as possible. My name is Chiara Conti. I'm the Director of Climate Change and Sustainability Services for EY Greece. I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation and also thank you for participating in this session. So we're going to discuss about sustainability reporting in the shipping sector. So we're going to see a bit of new trends, discuss how the shipping sector is identifying and prioritizing material issues for disclosures in their sustainability reporting and what's the business case behind that. And then the second part of the session will focus on the task force on climate-related financial disclosures and how climate change disclosures reveal business risk and opportunities. And we will focus again on the transportation sector. Now, starting with the business case for sustainability reporting, I'm going to discuss a few of the basics just so that we're all on the same page before moving on. So starting with what sustainability reporting is, if we take the Global Reporting Initiative definition, it's an organization's practice on reporting publicly on its economic, environmental, and social impacts, and hence how it contributes either positively or negatively to sustainable development. Now, an important point here that I would like to make is that in previous years, the sustainability reports used to be more about how the company is managing sustainable development for itself. Now, what has changed is that what investors and other stakeholders are looking for is how the company has identified the impacts that are more related to their business models and how these impacts actually create value for stakeholders and society, economy, and environment in general. So this is more of an outward-looking perspective than what we used to have as sustainability reports up to now. Now, the very new trend, let's say, that we have the past years is the focus that investors have on what they call ESG information, so environment, social, and governance information. So it seems that given a recent survey that we did on a global scale, for institutional investors, more than 97% of them said that they are paying attention to non-financial ESG information. Now, what's interesting in this slide is, first of all, the issues on the left hand of the slide is the issues that they're looking for are governance practices, supply chain, and how the impacts of company through their supply chains on environment and society and economy are affecting the stakeholders there. The history of poor human rights practices, again, throughout the supply and value chain, risks from climate change, resource scarcity, etc. Now, what's really interesting here is to see between the two different years, 2017 and 2018, the differences on how investors will rule out immediately an investment in case of poor governance practices, so from 38% that has gone up to 63%, the same for supply chain ESG factors, the same for human rights, but most importantly, the biggest change that we see here is from the risks related to climate change. Now, this is so one indication that's very important on how these topics have gained momentum on the investors' agenda. Now, if we take that to a more broad perspective, what we see here, don't bother about the very small fonts, I just want you to focus on the colors. What we see here is different risks identified from the World Economic Forum. So it's an analysis of the risks from 2007 to 2020. And the colors signify the blue ones are the economic, green ones environmental, orange geopolitical, red, societal, and purple are the technological ones. So what I want you to pay attention here is the focus and how the trend is changing between years to more environmental and social risks. So there's another indication that on a global scale, across societies and economies, risks that have to do with the environment, like climate change again and the disasters coming from that, and how we're able to mitigate extreme weather events and other risks are on the top of the agenda, both in terms of likelihood and impact. Now, the business case, besides from the risk perspective, has a lot to do with creating shared value. And I will get into the shipping sector specifics in a bit. Now, what we see here is the value that an organization creates, it's in three, let's say, different layers. So it's a direct value that we are used to disclose through financial reporting and annual reports, which is a gray circle. Then we have shared value, which is the value that is being exchanged between organizations and their stakeholders, and the externalities, either positive or negative, that have to do with how a company creates or destroys value for the general economy, society, and the environment. So a very easy example here is to discuss how a company creates value, let's say, for the specific group of stakeholders, employees specifically, through training and development. So, for example, a company that's investing in the training and development of their employees is creating value for the company itself, given that the employees are most likely to be more productive through training and development. But it also creates value for the state, for employees themselves, in terms of intellectual and their human capital. So it's a shared value creation here. And then if we take another example, like creation of employment, we would have the direct employment positions in the gray circle. We will have the indirect employment positions that a company creates through their supply chain and their value chain, both upstream and downstream, in the white circle. And then we would have what we call induced position of employment in the general economy. So sustainability reporting and the business case behind it is that it's a means to an end of disclosing the total value that a company creates in these three layers. Now, if we take a specific example from the shipping sector, we would see some issues that are either as identified through the company's responsibility to specific stakeholders for negative impacts that they have. So, for example, issues like safety, human rights, employee relations, diversity and inclusion, disaster response, responsible tax, and ocean health. Now, some other issues are categorized under a risk perspective, so air emissions, spills, anti-corruption, and responsible procurement. And there are a few issues that also fall under the third value perspective. So climate change, inclusive trade, food loss, and sea recycling. All of these issues obviously can be identified through the risk lens or through the shared value lens. It's not either or, but it's important to identify the issues of the sector based on the most important impacts that the sector has, either directly to stakeholders or broadly to the economy, society, and environment. Now, specifically for the shipping sector and other sectors, but now we'll focus on the shipping sector, there's a Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, which focuses on, it's actually a non-for-profit organization that provides sustainability accounting standards for SEC companies. Obviously, other companies are also able to use them. And for each sector, they have identified a series of what they call topics and account metrics, and their additional, obviously, category and unit of measure. So for the shipping sector, one material issue that needs to be disclosed in the ESG and sustainability reporting has to do with the environmental footprint of fuel use. Now, they are proposing specific accounting metrics for that, like gross global scope 1 emissions, the description of long-term and short-term strategy or plan to manage scope 1 emissions, reduction targets and loss of performance against these targets, total energy consumed, so forth, air emissions and energy efficiency design index specifically for new ships. Now, there are also other topics like ecological impacts. So, for example, the impacts on biodiversity. So the metric here would be the sweeping duration in marine protected areas and areas of protected conservation status, the percentage of fleet implementing ballast water, saying ballast water treatment, and so forth. So respectively for business ethics, there are specific indicators we have to do, for example, the Transparency International's Corruption Perception Index. So what are the which are the numbers of calls at ports in countries that have the 20th lowest rankings in this index, the amount of legal and regulatory fines and settlements associated with bribery or corruption, and then, of course, it's the category of accidents and safety management, which is really important for the sector. So number of serious marine incidents, lost time injury rate, number of conditions of class or recommendations, number of post-state control deficiencies and detentions. Now, there are a lot of other global standards out there. There's the Global Reporting Initiative, the Integrated Reporting Council's Integrated Reporting Framework, which all of them really emphasize the need to, in this exact logic, identify and prioritize in sustainability reports the topics that are most significant specifically for each sector based on the impacts that the sector creates. So if you would open a sustainability report from a company in the shipping sector, that should be very different in terms of focus and contents than one in the pharmaceutical sector or any other sector. So that's one of the main differences of how sustainability reporting has evolved. And this is the main reason why stakeholders, investors, and others are focusing more on this information, because it's information that is missing from regular annual publications. And it's information that is very important for the long-term prospects of a company and the value that it creates. Now, if we go specifically to check on the task force on climate-related financial disclosures and the need for understanding business risk and opportunities for climate change and how you need to disclose that, there is this new recommendations from the Financial Stability Board. So we see a lot of investors recently being really focused specifically for climate change, looking for this TCFD framework and disclosures in companies' reports. Now, how does this work? We have four main categories of disclosures that are expected in this framework. So the first one has to do with the governance, how the company is actually managing, including board and management involvement in terms of climate change, and how this comes down to the strategy that the company has identified and implements for that. So the actual and potential impacts of climate-related risks and opportunities, and how these affect the overall strategy, and most importantly, financial planning. So after that, they expect that given that climate change is embedded in the corporate strategy, companies should also have a process to identify, assess, and manage climate-related risk and opportunities. And this is a very important point, because it has to stop being ad hoc and it has to be integrated into broader risk assessments. Now, the final part of the disclosures that are recommended by the Financial Stability Board are metrics and targets and indicators to assess and manage these risks and opportunities. Now, this is the part usually that companies have already some disclosures in their annual or sustainability reports. For example, disclosures like the ones we just saw before on the SASB accounting metrics, disclosures about emissions, energy use, waste, and so forth. The part that is currently missing has to do more with governance strategy and risk management. Now, what we are doing as a why for the past years, and a new publication is coming out really soon, is we assess a large number of companies globally across sectors, so more than 500 companies in 18 countries that are actually disclosing information according to the TCFD recommendations. Now, the main findings for this are that companies have indeed proceeded in assessing and starting to disclose climate change related risks, which is an important step compared to what was happening a few years ago. And another important fact is the area for improvement that is there for actually enhancing the quality of these disclosures. Now, if we go into more specific, let's say, results of this barometer, we would see that from the total companies assessed, as we said, 2/3 of them are already disclosing, and only 1/3 is disclosing at the level that they are fully covering the recommendations of the TCFD framework. So the areas where they seem as overall across sectors that companies are lagging behind is how they have integrated this climate risk and opportunity assessment to their strategy and risk management. Now, if we segment the financial and non-financial sectors, we see a very small improvement in terms of quality for the non-financial sectors. And if we go specifically to the transportation sector, we would see that it's among the first non-financial sectors that has a high score on the coverage of the disclosures and a good score on the quality. Now, again, specifically for the transportation sector, we see that depending also on the countries, a few differences exist. So the more regulated the countries or the continent where the country belongs is in terms of climate change, the higher the scores, both in governance strategy, risk management, and targets and metrics. So we see France, Germany, and the US appearing as leaders compared to Asia at this point in time. Now, another important point is that half of the companies assessed have already responded to the CDP, so the Carbon Disclosure Project, and the quality scores are better in terms of targets and metrics compared to the rest. Now, if we would take away a few findings from this barometer overall, is as we said, that there are a lot of companies, 2/3 already disclosing, but they are lacking high quality disclosures in the TCFD. So there's a lot of room for improvement here. Also, as we said, the quality of the disclosures is found to be very much related to the regulation and government support in terms of climate change mitigation adaptation. So again, in countries where this is more regulated, we see better scores. And the quality also has to do with identifying transition and physical risks of climate change. So what we see here is that most companies identify transition risks, which are risks that have to do with the overall context and environment related to climate change, so how the regulation is changing, how our stakeholder needs and expectations are changing. And physical risks have to do with either acute or chronic impacts of climate change. It seems that physical risks are mostly overlooked in valuation models, which is posing questions on the long-term perspective. So if a company is not currently assessing the risks of acute or chronic climate events in specific time intervals and time periods, then it's not that easy to predict and make the necessary adjustments in terms of financial planning or assets, as an example. Now, one of the disclosures that are recommended under the TCFD has to do with how are you actually translating the operational risk that you find from climate change issues, and how do you transpose that into financial impact. So it seems that content and sources of disclosures have not yet been incorporating in the sense of financial disclosure. So this is something that is missing globally on a global scale. Some companies include disclosures within the annual report, but it's not always in financial terms. So that's, like, let's say, the ultimate objective of the TCFD recommendations. Now, in order to do that, what companies need is scenario analysis. So it seems scenario in terms of the degrees of how the temperature is rising in specific under specific scenarios, and what are the implications of these scenarios on operational and financial planning. So at the moment, it seems that it's only 12% of companies assessing scenario analysis and allowing that information to be part of their financial planning. Now, just to sum up, it's obvious from this assessment and our experience in general that climate risks are more complex and being longer term in nature are more difficult to assess compared to additional and business risks. Now, this has contributed obviously to a lack of understanding and difficulties in impact measurements. So the next steps for the sector would be, first of all, to make an integration of the different metrics and indicators that they currently use to measure and monitor climate change impacts, and understand that on a value chain perspective, and then add the four aspects of the TCFD, so governance, strategy, risk management, and metrics, in the way that they disclose this information. So at the end of the day, we get not only from an operational perspective where these risks have impact to the business, but also from a financial perspective. And this enables companies to be more prepared for what is coming in terms of both climate change risks and opportunities. So that was a brief oversight of these new developments. Thank you very much for your attention.